Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
Dr. Michael Fenster is a cardiologist, a gourmet chef, author, TV personality, and host of Code Delicious. Here's Dr. Mike.
Hey, welcome back, Healthy Nation, Food Nation. You are listening to Code Delicious, and I am Dr. Mike, and we want to hear your thoughts on the food experience today, so feel free to call in toll-free 877-711-5211. Once again, that is toll-free 877-711-5211, or just tweet me at WCWD. Hey, I am really excited to have our special guest this week. She's an incredible person. She's been an actress, a producer, a writer. She writes for the New York Times, the New York Post. So clearly no literary slouch there. She's the founder of her own corporation, Magnificent Mommies, specializing, and I think this is great, in education, personal, corporate, school-based. And most intriguingly, she just finished a book that's recently come out called My Fat Dad, a memoir of food, love, and family, with recipes, of course. And it tells the story of her dad, who at one time was 450 pounds. He was a very famous sort of madman ad executive, came up with slogans that you probably know about. And one thing that I think separates this book from all the other books that are out there that are on food and recipes and things you can look up online are the stories. I love when she tells the story. And it's so important and such an underappreciated aspect of food and the meal and the food experience. So please, a big Code Delicious welcome for my guest, Dawn. Dawn, thanks so much. Wonderful to have you on the program.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much.
So I got to ask, and I'm sure the folks want to know, what inspired you to write a book about your dad?
Well, it originally did not start as a book about my dad. It started as a recipe book for kids. My daughter was 3 years old. She started preschool, and I was one of those, you know, helicopter moms making her own, like, baby food. My daughter had never had any chemicals or sugar, and she was always, you know, very well behaved. Her first day of preschool, she comes out, and she's crying, and she's rolling on the floor, and she's throwing off her shoes, and she's running, you know, with the other kids to the ice cream truck, and she's, like, sweaty and shaky. I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? Tell me about your day. She's like, we had Oreo cookies and we had ice cream and we had chocolate milk and we had goldfish. I'm like, oh my God, all in one day. She's like, well, we had this snack and then we went to the library and then they gave us candy and it's so much fun. So then I kind of went in and talked to the teacher. I'm like, oh, can you like tell me a little bit about the food? You know, it's public school. She's like looking at me like, you know, I have like five eyes. And she's like, you know, this is,
because you know, she'd obviously had the, she had the Oreos as well, so she was a little wound up.
Exactly. So I'm like, you know what? I would love to come in. And she's like, but these are just snacks. It's no big deal. I'm like, well, actually, it is a big deal. I'm like, I would love to come in and do some cooking with the kids and show them what a real snack is. A real snack is like a mini meal with like a protein, a fat, and a carb. So I came in and we made homemade guacamole. You know, I'd show up. First, I'd come in, I'd be like, do you know what this is? I'd, you know, hold up the avocado. They're like, no. I'm like, do you know what guacamole is? Oh, yeah, yeah, we get it at Taco Bell. Would you eat this?
Geez.
No, we won't eat this. You know, then I'd hold up kale. Would you eat this? No, we wouldn't eat this. But then we made kale chips and guacamole and, you know, turkey and cheese roll-ups and all kinds of different snacks. And I started writing down all the snacks and all the recipes. And as I started writing them down, I realized there was no writing down just a recipe without, like, a memory attached to it. It was either the memory I was sharing in the classroom, but mostly it was, like, the memory I had cooking with my grandmother and how everything she taught me to cook, you know, had a really strong memory attached. And then I realized, like, every recipe has a memory, has a smell, has a taste, and really takes you back into a different time. And then as I started collecting the recipes, it kind of started forming into a memoir of my life through the different recipes and the food that kind of nurtured me for a lifetime. You know, it started out as like recipes handed down from my grandmother, and then it kind of evolved as the book goes on.
And is that where you learned to cook with your grandmother?
Oh, yeah. My grandmother was an amazing cook, and my mom, well, first of all, growing up, my dad was 450 pounds, and he loved to eat, but he was always on a diet. He was one of the original madmen. And he was working at an ad agency, and image was really important. So he was 450 pounds, but he always was on a diet because his agency was always putting pressure on him to lose weight because they wanted you to look a certain way.
So every was week he was he big diet. Growing? Was he big growing up?
Yeah,
I mean, was he always a heavy guy?
He always was.
And so what kind of foods, now, did your grandmother cook from him from scratch? Was he sort of the, you know, TV dinner, drive-through fast food kind of guy growing up?
No, not at all. My grandmother was from Romania, and she made all, you know, and she was an immigrant, so she came here, and she had a job in the garment district, and she was so happy that her paycheck was able to provide for him. So she would make elaborate meals every night, even after working 13 hours. She'd make, you know, homemade challahs and briskets with, you know, Coca-Cola marinades and mashed potatoes and blintzes and kugels and banana breads and mandel bread and rugula. You name it, she made it. And that's how she showed her love to my dad, was by feeding him. So the more he ate, the more he was feeling loved, the happier she was.
So it was really, you know, there is sort of an aspect of a food experience. And really, when you get down to it, you know, sort of the weight, health issues aside, it was food of love.
It was food of love.
And unfortunately, you know, probably marinating in the Coca-Cola and some of the other things, you know, we didn't know those things at the time. I mean, if we go back, and certainly, you know, I've spoken at the recent changes in the dietary guidelines, but we look at how they've misdirected us for 50 years on some of the things with the certain fats and the salts
and the saccharin and all the stuff. Right. It's really, it's really evolved.
And then people get confused. And much like your dad did in the past, folks are still chasing this holy grail of crazy diets. And
exactly.
What are some of the crazy diets that your dad was on?
My diet was on every single diet you could possibly imagine. He was on Atkins. He was on Weight Watchers. He was on the cookie diet. We lived at the fat farm for 6 months when my dad really needed to lose weight to keep his job. And he went there at 350 pounds. And after 6 months, he went down to 175 pounds.
Wow.
But he said six months to lose, 6 minutes to gain, because he wasn't learning how to eat. He was learning, you know, he was depriving himself. Diet means die, you know, depriving to lose weight, but it wasn't creating healthy habits. But then he also had his jaw sewn shut. He had a tape borne and injected in him. I mean, anything you can imagine.
Oh, my gosh.
He did. There was no diet that he didn't try. He used to say, I've tried every diet in the world, even the champagne and disco diet. I didn't lose weight, but I had a hell of a time.
That must have been a 70s staying alive, sort of thing.
He had a sense of humor about it. He wrote a slogan. I mean, he wrote many slogans. He wrote, Coke is it, Lego my ego, once you pop, you cannot stop, go for the gusto for Schlitz, and one for, I don't know if you remember Tab, you know, that pink soda can that everyone used to drink.
Right, right.
He wrote one called the Tab Dance. It keeps you light on your feet. Which was kind of like his joke after like being at the fat farm for 6 months, eating rice and.
Did you have all these products around your house growing up? I mean, how is it for you and kind of what, you know, how did these food experiences shape your life to where you are now?
Well, everything my dad had to eat, everything was all or nothing. So if he was on these diets, we had to be on the diet. You know, everyone had to support what he was doing, so there would be no temptation. So if he was on, like, the cookie diet, that's all we ate was cookies. If he was on the cabbage soup diet, that's all we ate was, like, cabbage soup. So even though I was, like, you know, like 3 years old during some of this, and I was, like, scrawny and underweight, and the doctor was always complaining to my mom, that's just how it was. That was the only food in our house. And my mom had she was trying to be an actress, and she had no interest in food whatsoever. She thought it was boring. It was a waste of time. She was kind of rebelling against her mother, who was, I talk about my two different grandmothers in the book, my Bubby Mary, who was my dad's mother, and my grandmother Beauty, who was the one who taught me to cook. And so my mom was rebelling against her mom, who spent her whole life, like, cooking and cleaning, and, you know, she was a woman of the time. She wanted to, you know, burn her bra and walk in protest, and, you know, cooking meals was not, you know, part of the equation.
Well, so where have you fallen out in all this? So you had all these, you really ran the gamut of food experience. I mean, the cookie diet to witnessing, hopefully you didn't have to do the tapeworm diet.
No, that one I didn't have to do, and I didn't have to do the Elvis diet, which involved taking sleeping pills and sleeping all day, and then waking up and eating a salad.
I would have thought you would have had the fried, it was a peanut butter and banana sandwiches fried with a complete stick of butter for each sandwich. That I thought that for sure would have been, you know, you wake up and thank you very much, you know, so
I'll take the rest.
Give me that blue pill there, Scylla.
Right, now you take another one, you eat your salad, then go back to sleep, and you do that for a couple of days, and then you lose like 10 pounds.
Yeah, it's called a coma.
Right. But you're not ingesting calories, so you're losing weight. So, yeah, we did that. No, so I didn't have to do that one.
So how did that affect you running, I mean, really, all over the dietary, nutrition, and really taste profile map here?
Well, let me just say, I'm really small still. So my dad is 6'2". I'm only 5'2". The doctor said I was supposed to be 5'7". So maybe I didn't reach my full height potential. But my parents also like to go out a lot. My dad, you know, at one time he worked for Playboy magazine, so he got to go, you know, to the Playboy mansion and go on Rush Street, and you know, they were out a lot. So luckily on the weekends, I got to stay with my grandmother, and mom's mom. And she was the most wonderful cook, and she was the most nurturing, loving presence in my life. Her name was Beauty. That's what I nicknamed her when I was little. And she taught me how to cook. But then when I was 9, we moved to New York City, and my grandmother was scared. She was sure I was going to either, like, die of malnutrition or, like, you know, fall in the subway. So every week she would send me a recipe card with a $20 bill, and she'd be like, if I'm cooking brisket for Papa, you can cook brisket for April, who's my little sister. If I'm making a kugel, you can make a kugel. So she'd send me these recipes and this money to go to the store. And I started making her recipes. So since I've been 9 years old, I've been totally cooking for myself.
How did you learn? I mean, you know, you just throw it out there and make it a cool. That's some of the pastry elements, you know, they can be pretty rigorous adhering to the recipe, and you have to kind of learn some techniques. Was it just trial and error? How'd you figure that out?
Well, if I had cooked with her since I was like, you know, 2 years old. But all her recipes are like, you know, kugel or cookies. It's all a bissel of this, a bissel of that. You can't go wrong. You know, if the cookies are a little runny, you put a little more flour. If they're, you know, if they're too stiff, add, you know, a touch more milk. You know, everything she makes and all the recipes are in my book, there's like nothing that could go wrong. Everything is really easy to make. Like, there's no way of messing them up.
It sounds like you had your own personal Julia Child, you know, guiding you through the steps there.
I did, and then since I lived in Manhattan, you know, and I had this subway card and my parents were never around, I could go, at 9 years old, I could go wherever I wanted. So I would wander the city and go to Chinatown and Little Italy and, you know, go to different spice markets. So I started, like, improvising on my grandmother's recipe. So, like, her beef stew became beef curry. So I really started kind of experimenting with different spices and then kind of, you know, coming up with my own style.
And I think that's, you know, what people, I always encourage folks, you know, when I'm teaching a course or lecture and I get the questions, kind of what you just said, which is, you know, don't just be a collector of recipes, you know, become a chef and have your own style, because as you really eloquently in the book, and it's so enjoyable to read,
that
folks have their own experiences, their own palate. And, you know, you and I could sit down with the same recipe, but it's going to be a little bit different when we truly cook it because of the different backgrounds in our food experience. You know, it's
exactly.
To me, that's the art. That's the art of the culinary arts.
Totally.
Would you agree?
Totally. Like, you could take a recipe, but then you taste. You always have to taste. Oh, you might like it a little sweeter. I might like it a little saltier. You might add a zest of lemon. I might add a zest of orange. So, and that's what I teach my daughter. My daughter is 11, and she's vegetarian, so she'll cook a lot of my grandmother's recipes. But instead of butter, she'll use coconut oil. Or instead of, like, eggs, she'll, like, you know, whisk up some water and flax seeds. You know, so it's about finding your own style. It's like the recipe kind of is, like, the base.
It's guidelines.
Memory. Yeah, it's the guideline. It's, like, the memory. It's passing down, like, generational secrets and stories. And then it's kind of making it your own.
And how do you feel? I mean, I love what you're doing, too, because you're preserving a food culture. You know, and I love, you know, the fusion and, you know, the integration and the evolution of food and food styles. But, you know, I hate that to see the day, you know, if you went to New York City and you went to, you know, Chinatown, and they're serving the same fusion that you can get, you know, in the Village, or it's the same, and it's some, you know, Asian Italian fusion, and every restaurant becomes homogenous.
Yes, that is it.
And I think we need to really maintain some integrity of identity.
I totally agree. And that's why it's different, like when, like, the there's a chef, or like there's an Italian restaurant a couple blocks from me where, like, there's like a 90-year-old grandmother and she's still in the kitchen. You know, these are her recipes.
Yeah.
You know, it has her flavor. You know, there might be cooks in there with her, but, you know, her personal touch is in there.
And I think those are the things that make all the difference. And at the beginning, when you were talking about, you know, going there and writing the recipes down and cooking with the kids, which I think is absolutely phenomenal. I have a question. So one of the techniques that I use to help break folks from the modern Western diet, which is so much of the sugar, salt, and fat kind of interwoven in a very addictive fashion, is to find their palate, find that spice blend, using spices and herbs to season and build flavor profiles. How in the world did you do that with kids? Because it's so hard sometimes once they get a hold of that sweet tooth.
Because, I mean, many of the things, if I would have just served them kale chips and said, eat this, without them making it with me, they probably would have never eaten it. But because we're spending an hour and they're, like, chopping it and they're, like, marinating it in the oil and they're throwing on some cheese on it and they're watching it bake and they're ready, you know, and they're serving it and they're putting it on their plates that they, like, you know, that they had drawn on and sent to fire, there's a sense of pride. So when they make it, then they're invested in it. Whereas if you just give it to them, they probably would not eat it. So it's involving them in the process, in the cooking and the shopping and, like, you know, deciding what we're going to make. And I think that's key.
I agree with you 100%. And I think you've really hit on another sort of technique. It's not just the ingredients, but it's the act. And I've got to ask you, you had maybe some memories from your childhood with these recipes you were sharing. But you were also with those kids and with your daughter, and, you know, when you cook with her together, you're making new memories.
Exactly. Like, I'm taking recipes from my childhood, I'm passing them down to my daughter, and she's making her own memories.
And I think that is so powerful. You know, it's that old, you know, you're not just giving somebody, you know, a broiled salmon, you're teaching them to fish.
Exactly.
And now they've got, you know, the skill set. They've got the memory, and I think that investment, I think that would apply to adults as well. And I think, you know, that's something they can learn from your book as well, because, you know, people want to just order the pre-done meals and pay X amount, usually some outrageous amount dollars to a company. They ship it to you. Hey, I'm really busy. But it becomes very different when you cook, and then you share that with someone.
I totally agree. And even if you can't do it, you know, every day, if you do it once a week. So it's about creating the memory. It's not really about judgment. It's kind of like, you know, it should be something enjoyable instead of a chore. You know, and when it's done together, it's always much more fun.
So if somebody was looking for and says, you know, that's a great idea, I'm going to take Sundays and make it a family food Sunday. And is there a recipe that you would, somebody maybe doesn't have a lot of skill in the kitchen, maybe a little bit intimidated in the kitchen, a little intimidated from the Food Network shows. Is there a book and a story from your book that you could share to kind of help them?
Well, my favorite is always, you know, my grandmother's soup. I have my grandmother's chicken soup. It's called Chicken Soup with a Kick, and it's the easiest, you know, it's the easiest thing. As my grandmother's saying, you throw in a little bit of this, you throw in a little bit of that, and then you let it boil. There's nothing that can go wrong. You just keep putting in some water. You know, she would say chicken feet, chicken legs, chicken wings, whatever you have. Throw in some carrots, some onions. And I have that chicken soup, which I love, and then I have my grandmother, Bubby Mary's mushroom barley soup, which helped my dad launch the campaign for Campbell's Soup, which is soup is good food.
Oh, wow. So there, something almost everybody can relate to. Hey, Dawn, before we go, where can folks get the book?
Okay, so my book is called My Fat Dad, A Memoir of Food, Love, and Family with Recipes, and you can purchase it on Amazon.
And get out there, folks, and get Dawn, thanks so much. Folks, get out there and get about 6 copies of that book. That makes a great gift.